23, side 2, House Labor Committee, Monday, May 30th. Public hearing and work session, Senate Bill 882, House Bill 2237, Senate Bill 297, and House Bill 2820.
The committee will come to order. The clerk will note those present. All others are excused. The first bill I'm going to bring up today, and it's specifically that Representative Markham asked me to put a bill on the agenda and have the opportunity for a number of people to come up and testify. That bill was House Bill 2820. Kip and Bill are here, so I'm going to start with them and open up the hearing on 2820. Go ahead, Bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, I'm Representative Bill Markham from Douglas County, and I have here at the head table with me at the moment Representative Kip Lombard from the Ashland Klamath Falls area and Mr. French, who is the legal counsel for the Oregon Log Truckers Association. Also behind me, I have a number of independent owner-operator truckers. I have one or two people here who are in the sawmill business. Certainly the Oregon Log Truckers Association is here with Mr. McKellar. Chuck Gill of SAFE is here, and let me very briefly run through my page and a half here. And before I get into it, if I may, Mr. Chairman, and I have copies here for all the committee, of which the clerk can pass out in due time. Other members of the Oregon legislature that have indicated they definitely favor the bill and asked me to read into the record their name, and some of them would like to appear just for a few 30-second shot on this before we're through this morning. If I may, I'll just read the list of them, Mr. Chairman. It's Representative Wolfer, Magruder, Jones, Sam Johnson, Bill Grinnell, Marks, Van Fleet, Gilmore, Byers, Cecil Johnson, Rogers, Will Helms, who sits there in front of me, as well as Representative Rogers, Max Simpson, Doc Stevenson, Representative Lombard, who's here at the table with us, Klein, Duff, Bugis, and Riebel, and two senators have already come over and indicated their interest in the bill, Senator Jernstedt and Potts. Let me just give you a fast shot on the bill, if I may, Chairman and members of the committee. The bill would add to the exempt category of persons who currently do have to be covered by workmen's, who do not have to be covered by workmen's compensation insurance. Equipment owners who own and operate equipment for hire would not have to be covered by workmen's compensation insurance. The workers now exempt, non-subject, include domestic servants, gardeners, casuals, employees with federal coverage, city workers of cities over 200,000, meaning Portland, of course, religious charitable organization, employees working for the room and board, and this is where what we're aimed at, the sole proprietors, partners, and officers of corporations. Now, in the area of the historical background, if passed, the bill would alleviate a chronic problem affecting owner-operators, employers, workman compensation insurance companies, and the courts. For a long time, the courts have had to settle on a case-by-case basis the question of whether owner-operators, such as log truckers, were workers or independent contractors. The courts have ruled that it didn't make any difference if the equipment operator were called an independent contractor. If the operator were injured and met the case law definition of a worker, the person or company for whom the person worked as an employer or as the operator an employee and eligible for benefits. This has created a situation where independent owners operating equipment for hire have found it difficult to secure contracts. Many employers with whom they might contract were reluctant to enter into an agreement, which might later be declared to be an employer-employee relationship. In such cases, the employer must then pay back premiums and assume the additional claims cost. The problem can be solved by making such owner-operators of equipment for hire non-subject workers. As such, they could elect to cover themselves if they so desired. The worker with whom they have, the employer with whom they have the contract could also elect to cover them under provisions which allow for coverage of non-subject workers. This would allow the status of the owner-operator to be determined at the time of the agreement rather than in costly court actions after the accident has taken place. Mr. Chairman, this problem was brought to me. Of course, I've been in the business for many years in the wood products business, so I'm aware of it. But both independent log trucker owners in my county, as well as two different mills in my immediate area, came to me with this problem last fall, and so that's really the reason was the bill was put together, and I think we have something here that should be explored to the fullest extent. Thank you.
Thank you, Bill. Kip?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Representative Kip Lombard from District 52. I just have a very short statement to make for the record on this matter, and then I do have another committee meeting. I am appearing in support of the bill. I'd like to just make basically two comments. Number one, it's always seemed rather anomalous to me how often we say to an individual that you are an independent businessman, but then we're going to protect you from your own foolishness. And it seems to me in this particular area, we've carved out, or at least historically have attempted to carve out the sole proprietor, and then we proceed to erode that concept, and that leads into the second point that I'd like to make. And that's with regards to court interpretations of what we do here. When we legislate the parameters, we really don't always make it clear what our intentions are with regards to the specifics, and the courts, quite naturally, are left up to ascertain what our intent is. And where we can make our intent clearly known, I think we should do so. In the law today, the question, it seems to me, in part has been who is a, quote, sole proprietor. The courts have not always done justice to this term. I feel that the interpretations that I think will be gone over by Mr. French later on have strained the common sense definition of this term, and it seems to me that the legislation that we're proposing today will get us back on track on what we've really intended, what's been intended in the past with regards to this legislation. Thank you.
Are there any questions of either Representative Markham or Representative Lombard?
Yes.
Derek, or is it?
Markham, I guess, because you started first, but it doesn't make any difference. You talked only about, if I remember right, about just about log truckers, and the amendments go much further than that. Are you speaking for people in other kinds of businesses, too, or Kip, are you?
I
talked about hauling rock, sand, gravel, dirt, concrete, backhoe work, a tractor,
well,
any other motor vehicle commonly operated for hire.
Well, Representative Starr, if I may, this, of course, you have the same situation, including these other people that you're referring to, B, C, D, and E. But I have amendments prepared that would take it back to only a motor vehicle used in the transportation of logs, poles, and piling, if, in fact, the committee feels is too wide in its scope.
Okay, thanks.
Yes, Representative Bottle.
I have several questions, Bill. One is that if this bill were passed and that log truck driver were to have an accident and he was not covered under workman's comp, what sort of benefits would he have?
Well, even if we change the law to the extent that I'm proposing, in some cases it could still be wrapped through the court and they'd have to ultimately make the final determination, unfortunately. What we're trying to do in here is put in more teeth for the judge to look at and say, well, he is an independent operator, owner-operator. But back to the basic question you asked, if the man is capable of running his own business, which includes at least a $65,000 piece of equipment he's operating, and the time he gets a shop built and all his air and hydraulic equipment in there to maintain it, he's in $100,000. I think he's bright enough to buy health accident insurance to cover him, and of course that would be on a 24-hour basis. I don't know if I'm answering your question, but I truly believe that, and he'd have that volition, which he's denied today.
All right, then the next question I have, under workman's comp or any program, I assumed the end cost would be borne by the consumer, right? And these would be costs that could be passed on to the consumer.
Oh, yes. In everything, I might add.
All
yes,
right.
You're right, Representative.
All right, then the next question on page 2, line 31. Any person or persons operating as partners who have an ownership or leasehold interest in equipment and are engaged in the business of operating such equipment for hire. Now, you know as well as I do that there's always people that are attempting to evade the law and the intent of the law. Now, would it be possible for an employer and an employee to enter into an arrangement whereby the employee was given, say, 1/50th of an interest in this piece of equipment, and then we could call that person a partner, and that person then would not be eligible for workman's comp benefits?
I would assume that would be possible. I would assume he'd have to buy that 1/50th, but I'm not. That's a difficult question for me to answer,
all right,
Glenn.
Would you be adverse to amendments to the bill that would say that the owner-operator would have to have more than or at least a 50% ownership?
I don't see anything wrong with that. Personally, we're going to have some reaction, hopefully from people sitting behind me that are in the business, but I get the point you're making. I think it's a point well taken. Mr. French might like to, may my mouthpiece respond to you, Representative Otto.
Representative Otto, I think
Mr.
that...
Mr. French, would you put your name, if you're going to start testifying, would you put your name on the record so we can pick it up on the tape at that point?
I believe I have it over there. But
read it.
Pardon me. Joe French, representing Oregon Log Truckers Association, P.O. Box 2167, Salem, Oregon. I believe Representative Otto, in answer to your question of the 1/50th, I think it would be similar to when a person forms a corporation with the main purpose to avoid creditors, that if the corporation contracts and makes a lot of bills, the court would pierce the corporate veil saying that was made just to get around the law. And I think the 1/50th example, I'm sure that the court, if that case was litigated, as a workman's comp case, I think perhaps the intent would be shown that it was merely to circumvent the law and would not be upheld. That would be my reaction to that.
I can appreciate that, but I also think that you can appreciate it, that we don't want to bring about unnecessary lawsuits.
No, I agree with that.
And what would your reaction be to...
I would not see anything wrong with that.
With a 50%, at least 50% ownership.
Representative Otto, I might add that the only question I would have in it is, of course, that there are legitimate partnerships that involve more than two people.
Yeah.
And I guess it's a question of where we draw the line or where we make a de minimis argument, because you could have three or four people involved in the ownership, for instance, of a vehicle, particularly a vehicle as expensive as a logging truck, and you know, you may have one active owner-operator and the other passive partners for financial purposes, and I'd hate to see you negate that kind of an arrangement is the only thing. And as I say, I don't know where you draw the line, but I think that is a problem that you should consider if you're going to talk about setting certain minimums.
If I may, Representative Otto, reflecting on your question, I can think of instances where there's a father and two sons right in my backyard that have numerous log trucks, as a matter of fact, and I can think of another operation where there's four of them involved. I'd think something around 20% may be more practical, but we'll hear from people that are right on the firing line a little later.
Representative Wilhelm.
Bill, we in this committee, as you well know, deal with a lot of requests regarding workman's compensation, unemployment insurance.
and the exemptions of certain employee or employer groups and the inclusion of others, et cetera, et cetera. The problems generally are divided equally, I think, between the workman's compensation and unemployment insurance. Do you feel that the group you're speaking in behalf of, and that I am later going to speak in behalf of here this morning, would also have the same attitude towards unemployment insurance? That is, would they also like to be excluded from the unemployment insurance law the same as they want to be excluded from the workman's compensation law?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Wilhelms, they already are excluded from unemployment.
The owner-operators yes. never draw unemployment insurance.
Under 657.047.
Gary, that was the, you know, when you and I met this last week and we talked about that up in
yes.
the office, that's the statute that excludes them, and that was the one that, remember, at that time I said that with the bill it may be better to pick up a statute like that and apply it to this
right.
and do it the way they're doing it.
Employment is my name, Mr. Chairman. Employment, transportation logs, poles, and piling excluded one as used in this chapter. Employment does not include transportation of motor vehicle of logs, poles, and piling for any person who both furnishes and maintains a vehicle used in such transportation. That's pretty good language. Maybe I'll put that in my bill, Mr. Chairman.
Well,
but I want the record to show clearly, though, that these people that you're speaking on behalf of here this morning have that attitude towards unemployment insurance also. I mean, it is the law, but I assume the law is there because they're passed.
Yeah.
Mr. Markham, I'll let you know that Representative Wilhelm and I are about 10 miles an hour faster than you are on that because we already picked that up. We're already looking at that.
You've had the benefit, Mr. Chairman, of about 5 months of darn hard work here in this area.
Here's what I'd like to do, Bill. I know you want Mr. Bruce to speak. He is from Salem. What the problem is you have a number of people that have traveled a great distance to speak. The session's going to start at 10:30. I want to make sure that all those people who have taken their holiday and have come over here to speak get an opportunity to do so.
Beautiful.
So, Mr. French, what I'm going to ask you to do, if I could put you off, because you're the one that we're going to have to talk to with all the technical information, and we can get a hold of you much easier than we can a lot of these other people. If that's okay with you, we could do it that way. Bob, did you want to say anything? Come on up here.
Two of your own people would like to speak briefly, too, if you care to hear them today, Mr. Chairman.
I'll wait until afterward. Max, why don't you come on up, both of you? The committee members can speak any time they want.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, while everyone's settling in case I forget it before when we get to the voting on this, I'd better declare conflict of interest. My son-in-law and his father are partners in a log trucking operation.
Got a conflict there.
Yes.
Go ahead, Max.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and members of the committee. For the record, I'm representing Max Simpson, District 59, and as I understand this bill, that it deals strictly with owner-operators, and I think it's a must, an absolute must, and some of my people from my district are here this morning, and they have come a long ways, and I don't pretend to take any more of your time, but I think it's simply a must that they have the option, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. And that's all I would have to say this morning, not to take any more time.
Thank you, Max. Go ahead, Bob.
For the record, I'm Bob Bujati from the 58th District. I also support this bill, and I have some people back here who've been telling me I should support this bill also. And that's all I'm going to say, too, because I know you've got a room full.
Thank you, Bob. I appreciate both of you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Ron Bowers.
I'm Ron Bowers. I live at 1631 Clark Avenue in Cottage Grove. The bill we're talking about here, I feel that we should have the option to either say yes or no. Myself, and I think I probably speak for a majority of them, we all carry, well, I should eliminate all, but most of us carry a private insurance to cover our families. Now, to get this to cover our families, we have to cover ourselves first. So the majority of us are already carrying an insurance. at times I've hired people to drive my truck. When my wife was having a baby, I was off for 3 days. I hired a guy to drive my truck. I've worked for, in the last 6 months, about 7 different loggers that I contract all for. So, are there any questions you'd like to ask?
The option that you're talking about, you're just saying that you would rather have the independent owner-operator have the option to either have the person you're contracting with supply it or you supply it.
Myself.
Okay. Well,
and this is what we're talking about here, as I understand it. If it's going to be required of me to have it to haul on a job, then I'd like to have the option to say, no, I don't want to work for you. Or at least have the option where I can say, yes, I want to carry the state industrial.
Okay. I thank you, Ron.
Thank you
very much. Mr. Marlon Cox.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Marlon Cox. I represent Sydney Lumber Company of Riddle, a logging and sawmill business employing currently 170 people. I have worked for Sydney Lumber for 30 years this year. We support House Bill 2820 introduced by Representative Markham. In fact, we were probably instrumental in the bill being written in the first place, having recognized problems in the area for many years. C&D has always been partial to hiring owner drivers in the log trucking business because we've always taken the position that it is desirable for the little man to earn a living for himself in his own business. It has always been a handicap to C&D due to the fact that the owner driver cannot declare himself an independent contractor as relates to workman's compensation due primarily to a ruling made in the courts many years ago identified as the Bowser case. We have never understood the reasoning behind the ruling. A logger employing one or more persons is not required to insure himself under workman's comp. It has always been impossible for C&D to police log truckers as they are prone to pick up a load at the landing should we have logs and their immediate employer was out. Also, there are other factors making it difficult due to the people involved. It then becomes our responsibility to determine whether or not they are insured so that we should pick up their coverage will be subject upon audit to pay premium upon them. Obviously, we cannot pay insurance coverage on owner drivers and not on fleet owners and pay the same hauling rate. That would be discriminatory. The increased cost of workers' compensation insurance for owner drivers may very well force them to quit business for themselves if we cannot resolve the problem we are facing. We believe they should have the right to declare themselves independent contractors, call for whoever they wish, and carry their insurance where they wish with the coverage they wish. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Cox. I have a couple more representatives here that want to get on the record, so I'm going to call them up. They're going to be very quick. Representative Byers and Representative Bugis. Where'd Ted go? Want to get him for me? Go ahead, bud.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. For the record, I'm State Representative Bud Byers, District 37, which includes a heck of a lot of area where contract loggers are. We have, in fact, in my constituency, probably as many as any district in the state. The haulers and owner-operators are concerned about the continual infringement on them as free enterprise businessmen, and they certainly are in support of this legislation, as am I, and I'm going to make it very brief because I know there are a lot of people here who want to tell a story, but I wanted to lend my support to House Bill 2820, and I regret that I didn't get a chance to get my name on it because this is it is important to our people, and we're not talking just
as I understand it, we're talking about construction people. We have a lot of people who are the owner-operators of their own equipment who are concerned about this.
Representative Bias, I think that Representative Markham would be willing that if the bill comes out of the committee to have a period of which other people could sign on to the bill and co-sponsor it with it. Wouldn't that right, Representative Markham?
I'd be delighted, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Markham. Go ahead. Representative Bugis.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, I'm Ted Bugis, representing from District Number 2. And as you may have noticed, I room right next door to Representative Markham, and so I'm the second signer of the bill. And however, he didn't have to twist any arms in my case. Probably second only to interest in general overhaul or revision of the workman's comp coverage. The loggers have hit me on this problem with correspondence and telephone calls, and I would like very much to see some kind of consideration given to the independent truck owner and driver. And this bill is the type of thing I believe that at least they tell me they need very badly, and I would like to urge a favorable consideration by the committee.
Thank you, Representative Byers. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Michael Quadros.
My name is Mike Quadros. I'm from Klamath Falls.
Could you spell your last name, sir?
Quadros. Quadros.
Thank you, sir.
And I'd just like to say, in our case around Klamath, we have to compete with the Californians on the log hauling end of it. And their rate is $17.50 per hundred, where ours is $32 per hundred. And it just makes it a little tougher to compete with some of these guys that are coming into our area. And when I first started hauling, why, I was carrying my own insurance, KMSB, there in Klamath Falls, and they have full-time 24-hour coverage. It's about the best health insurance you can get in that area that I found. Plus, I had a disability policy that covered me day and night, and I paid $30 per month on my KMSB, and my disability was only ran $250 per year. And of course, when I tried to find a job in our area, why, that's the first thing they ask if you carry state comp. And I told them no, but I have my own insurance. Well, they say, first thing they tell you is that your insurance has to be comparable with state comp, which I found out that mine wasn't. So I wound up going down to state comp and canceling my other insurance. But it just kind of works a hardship on an independent operator. And I think if they could get the thing changed, it would sure be a big help. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Connors.
Just like for the record, to thank the folks from Klamath.
No, I highly appreciate it.
In the utmost of respect.
I do, sir. I do. If you could, when I call you, your name, number of you haven't stated where you're from, if you could tell us what community that you've traveled from for this hearing. Is it Robert Marion?
Mayor.
Mayor? I'm sorry, sir.
My name is Robert Mayer. I'm with the insurance M-A-I-E-R, with the insurance brokerage firm of Fred S. James and Company. Our firm is broker and consultant to the Oregon Log Truckers Association. Just want to make the committee aware of the fact that should this bill be passed, that there are group insurance programs available through the Log Truckers Association, which, while they do not duplicate workman's compensation benefits, do provide very adequate coverage both for medical benefits, death benefits, and disability income benefits. I could give you some details of those programs if anybody's interested, but
I would like to. Where are you from? Portland?
Portland, yes.
Okay. There are a number of other people here that are going to testify. What I'd like to do is the bill. Appears from just what Representative Otto said that he's going to have some amendments. What I'd like to do is to be able to have you available at a later time when it's up for work session to come back and describe
certainly be very
the benefits
happy.
That are applicable. Thank you very much, sir. Mr. Gary Putnam.
My name's Gary Putnam, Klamath Falls, and along with Mike, we've experienced it in our area with the California trucks coming in. Their compensation rate's cheaper than ours. We find that it's hard to compete against them. If this bill does go through, it would relieve a burden on us, where several of us in this area have bought new trucks with a high price of the trucks, the prices of our parts, and fuel spiraling, and now our compensation going up. We feel that we can no longer afford to have it, but yet we can no longer afford not to have it. And if we could have it to where we could elect to carry our own insurance, it would sure be a better help to us and benefits.
Thank you, Gary. Mr. Bernie Johnson?
I'm Bernie Johnson, Klamath Falls, Oregon, also an independent operator. And I'd just like to say, along with Gary and Mike there, that I feel that with the workers' compensation and everything is kind of competing in our area, you know, like they said, with the California trucks. And also, there's most generally of all of us have bought new trucks up there, and we've got truck payments and stuff like that. It's also going on with the program, and I feel like with the gentleman that was sitting on the right over here when the meeting first got going, that we all have, most of us have got sense enough that if we're driving a $40,000 or $50,000 rig hauling logs and got a shop and a bunch of tools and everything, that we've got sense enough to go out and take an insurance policy out on our own that will cover our family if we happen to pass off in an accident or something like that. And myself, I also do have one on besides workman's comp when I have had to need it. And I always will have it because I feel that if I do pass off, my family is, you know, shouldn't be, you know, behind. As it is right now with haul rates and everything going about and fuel increase and parts and tires and everything, workman's comp is kind of getting out of our range of being able to afford it. So that's all I got to say. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Hamilton?
Now, Mr. Chairman, my name is W.J. Hamilton. I'm also from Klamath Falls, and I'm in favor of this bill for the same reason that these other fellows from Klamath Falls have been up here and talked about. I carry my own insurance program. I have to carry my own insurance to in order to protect my wife and myself, and also carry disability insurance. So I feel that I'm adequately insured. I carry good life insurance policies, and I think I'm adequately insured to cover what I have in this world. And I think I should have an option as to whether I want to carry state comp or not. I believe this is a good bill, and I believe it's one that we really need, and I think that the representation that we have up here from our part of the state this morning, I think we have 11 or 12 people here, and I think that it really shows that they're really interested in this. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, go right ahead, sir.
Mr. Hamilton, we hear about the rates. Now, what was it, 34 or 50 per 100?
32.
Well, that's close enough.
13, well, I believe it is.
We deal a lot with rates around here, but sometimes we don't equate that to how much it is in a year's time. Could you tell me about how much an average owner-operator would pay in premiums at $32 a hundred for over a year's time?
Right, at the rate as it is right now, over the period of a year on a 10-month average work year. I would say 10 months would be a good average in our area. Some fellows work longer than that. Some fellows work 12 months. But on a 10-month average, the rate right now would be about a little better than $2,800 a year.
Thank you.
That's an average what you're paying out?
Yes, around $280 a month, I believe it is right now. And so on a 10-month average, that would be around $2,800.
Thank you very much, Mr. Hamilton.
Thank you.
Is it Mr. Wanson? Yes, sir.
Mr. Chairman, I'm Vern Wanser from Klamath Falls. Up against the same as the...
Vern, could you spell your last name?
W-O-N-S-E-R.
Thank you.
I'm up against the same thing as the rest of the truckers in that area. And along with that, I have to carry dual coverage to cover my family and myself. And I can buy the other insurance for about half the price. So I just can't see the state comp. That's about all I got. Thank you.
How many, Mr. Sponsor, how many trucks do you have?
One.
One?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Thank you.
Question?
Just a second,
Mr.
Sponsor,
I'm
not going to let you get away.
Is your other insurance, you get comparable coverage?
Yes. Better.
Better coverage? Well, can you tell me what the difference is in coverage between what the California operators that we said are kind of moving, and I think this Mike Quadra said they were moving into the area because they had that advantage. Any difference in benefits as far as you know that they get?
No, sir, I don't know on benefits.
Do you think that there are any, or you just aren't aware of any?
No, I would say it's probably comparable.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thanks.
Thank you very much, sir. Is it Jim Rudell's?
Rudisill,
I'm sorry, sir. So the name of Kulongoski, I shouldn't have been. If you'll bear with me, I will forget you.
My name is Jim Rudisill, R-U-D-I-S-I-L-L, and I'm from Estacada. I own one log truck and operate it, and all over the state, but generally in the Clackamas Multnomah area. I'm permitted to haul logs by the PUC in 23 counties, in or out of. And I feel, as an owner-operator of my own business, that I should not be required by a law to cover myself with insurance when I can buy other policies that will cover me pretty well the same, maybe a little bit less, but adequately. I have dual coverage because I've bought disability insurance, I've bought medical insurance through a trucker's organization so that my family is covered, and now we have a chance to support a bill that will give us the right to elect whether or not we want to cover ourselves with workman's comp. And I feel that we should have this right.
Okay. Thank you very much, sir. Any questions? Thank you. Mr. McDowell?
I'm Derek McDowell, Klamath Falls, and as a one-truck operator, I also feel that we should have the right to either go with the state compensation or to seek out a more competitive company and go with this company. And as contract haulers, we are in a position that we have to be competitive with the rest of the industry. And as it stands today, state compensation in the insurance business is not competitive. If we're to maintain a competitive status in our business, we should be able to seek out an insurance company that is competitive rate-wise and go with a company of our choice. Thank you.
Thank you very much, sir. Is it Mr. Dale Flynn from Subordinate Silver Falls High?
I'm Dale Hunt. I have one truck, and I'm in favor of this bill because I do not believe we can survive the way that things are going now.
You're Mr. Flynn, F-L-I?
Dale, H-U-N-T.
Okay. Thank you.
Hunt.
Mr. Spinner?
Which one?
Vincent?
Oh.
I know another one of you are here to testify on a couple on another bill.
That's fine with both of you.
Okay.
Okay.
I'm Vincent Spinner, state in Oregon. I'm one truck operator. And I agree 100% with the statements that were made here this morning. I think we got to have this thing to survive. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Lukens?
Hi, my name is Robert Lukens from Midland, Klamath Falls. I'm a one truck operator. And in our area, I'm not too sure about the rest of the state, but I know for a fact we operate on a very small profit margin. And with workman's compensation, there isn't any profit left. And I'd like to see us move on to an area where we can pick and choose and go shopping for our own insurance. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Lee. Mr. Sagner?
Which one?
Paul. Paul.
Mr. Chairman, I'm Paul Sagner. I'm a small fleet operator, owner-operator from Baker, Oregon. Being a fleet operator, it's necessary that I carry workman's comp on my employees. Being an owner-operator and driving probably 90% of the time, working in the shop and having other responsibilities, I feel that I should have a choice in the insurance that I choose for myself. Like many of the others here, I would prefer a health and accident policy, which would cover my family and still give me adequate protection with the other policies that I cover at the time, and allowing me to make the choice on my own personal election regarding workman's comp. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman.
Okay, go ahead, Bill.
I'd like to ask Mr. Sagner a question. I understood that if you had employees, that then you did not have to cover yourself.
My understanding is that being an owner-operator, I have the election of a personal election that I can cover myself. However, when I'm behind the wheel and working on a job, the logger requires that I do carry it, because if I don't, then he is obligated to pay a premium on me. The problem that's involved in the past, in cases like this, where an independent owner-operator or someone like myself did not cover him, the logger is prone to do it, but since he doesn't pay you a wage, if he does, he'll withhold the premium on the full gross amount that the truck earns, which forces us then to have personal coverage.
Mr. Chairman, I either have a misunderstanding of how this operates, or the logger or Mr. Sagner does, because my understanding was that if you are in fact have other employees working for you, you can still work yourself and not have to have the coverage.
Well, why don't I do this? Okay. Chuck's here, and why don't I just wait? I'll write the question down,
right,
and as soon as these other people come, they'll be here, and he can answer that question for us. Okay?
Okay.
Just a second. Sit down.
You indicated that you were a fleet operator. Do any of your employees have a vested interest in these vehicles?
No, I'm a sole proprietor.
How many units do you operate?
5 units.
Would you feel that if we were to take this bill and say that you could get your insurance elsewhere, but not allow you the right to participate in the SAFE program, do you think that would be equitable or not? Would you, what I'm really saying is, would you want to exclude SAFE or have that as an option?
For myself, you mean?
Yeah.
Say, yes, I would rather have the option. In fact, I would exclude SAFE because, or any workman's comp program. I would simply take a good health and accident policy with disability benefits. I have revenue income generated from the fact that I have a fleet operation. It was mentioned earlier, there is an inequity here because as a businessman, owner-operator, I'm not eligible for unemployment compensation. But nonetheless, I'm considered an employee and must therefore pay a workman's comp premium.
But you wouldn't want the bill to end up saying that you were excluded from.
No, I think that we should all have the choice. Personally, I would take what I would feel an adequate health and accident policy, personal. But I think the option should be there for those that feel they may want the extra coverage that workman's comp could provide.
Okay. Thank you very much. Let me ask a question, Sanger. That there's another bill in the legislature that is moving to exempt certain employees from the coverage of workman's compensation, much as you're asking. But what the bill is going to do is going to require that the employer maintain a minimum level of health and medical benefits for their people. Would you be agreeable to something of that nature? In other words, that you would have to statutorily, the only way that you would be able to opt out from under the workman's comp is that you would have to show that you have a certain level of medical and health benefits for yourself.
Would that apply to me personally or to my employees?
Well, just you. I'm not talking about the fleet operation now. I'm just talking about you individually.
In other words, I would be required to have an insurance, but maybe have some lesser limits than workman's comp. Yes, I would accept that because that's the area or the way that I would go anyway. I feel we need some insurance.
But you know, it's a type of problem that probably 95% of the people in your situation, well, not as the fleet operation, but as an owner-operator, would probably, as it was stated earlier, have insurance. There'd be no doubt that they would because you got too big of an investment. But the state has to look at the 5% that are not going to do that and are going to do it just merely as a cost saving. And we have to have some concern about what's going to happen to them. And by this minimum level of benefits, at least the state's assured that the people are going to be covered by some medical and health program and not be forced to go on to public assistance or something if they're injured.
Well, I think that would be the answer to a great deal of problems if there were a more minimum level, you know. We all know what's going on in workman's comp, and we know what's been happening in the legislature, the pros and cons, and the increased benefits, and it continues to cost. The question was asked earlier about the fact that, excuse me,
go ahead,
that these costs of increased cost of operation can be passed on to the consumer. That's probably more difficult in our area than in many, because we're dealing with many people on the way to our revenue. We're dealing with loggers and mills, and it's difficult for us to pass on the costs because we have to get an increase from a logger who has to in turn get an increase from a mill of some sort. They can be passed on, but it's a very slow process. We cannot pass on the increases as rapidly as we need to.
Thank you very much.
Al, do you have any competition from Idaho where you are?
No, we haven't. We're not really isolated over there at Baker. We have one mill, but no, we have had no Idaho competition.
Thank you, Bill. Go ahead.
To follow up this particular question, there must be some areas of the state that does have competition from Idaho and Washington. Are you aware of their situations?
No, I'm not. We have had Idaho trucks in part of our haul area, but in the cases they have been there, it is for logs that are going into Idaho. We have not had any actual local competition.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Sick. Mr. Good?
Mr. Chairman, my name is Curtis Good from Baker, Oregon. I am a one-truck owner-operator, and I am in favor of this bill. I know for a fact in our area over there, there has been several owner-operators that have gone out of business. You see them every month. You see the transfers coming through the PUC office where guys have sold out, and I do believe that this state comp is one of the big things that is forcing individuals like myself out of business, because it's just getting plumb out of reason. There's, like everybody has stated, there are just so much other insurances that you can take out to cover yourself and our families that are so much cheaper than what this state comp is. It's just plumb out of reason. That's all.
Do you provide your own coverage at this time?
I have got my own coverage on my that I have to carry for myself to cover my family. Yes.
You don't have an employer's number with the state accident insurance fund now. Have you ever insured through workman's comp yourself? Let me ask you that.
Yes, I'm covered. Yes.
Okay.
I couldn't operate over there without it, because we have to have a certificate. The logger that I worked for last year, I had to provide him with a certificate from showing that I was covered by SAFE. Without it, you won't even go get in the woods.
What are you paying? Is the $3,250 rate is what you're paying?
$3,213. Figures out around $278.56 a month.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Bill.
Do you also have a private health plan that covers you and your family?
Right.
Now, Do you know if you are injured on the job, right now, since you're covered by workman's comp, will your private carrier also pay?
Well, I can't answer that truthfully, because I really, I've never been injured on the job. Okay. I've never had a claim with any of the insurance. So
the answer would be no.
As far as I know, yes.
Yes, because most private or group plans have an exclusion for any kind of workman's comp.
Right. Usually, if you've got one insurance, the other one won't cover.
But if you were not covered by workman's comp,
your private plan would cover you, right.
What is, if I may ask, your monthly payment on your family medical plan?
It runs me I believe it was $84. That's for myself, my wife, and two children. And that's
so your
coverage is 24 hours a day.
So you're averaging about $360-some a month for both yourself and your family.
Right.
Okay.
And thank you. With the other costs going up, it's really hard to put up with. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Good. Mr. Green? Just a second, Mr. Green, why don't you sit down right there before you start talking. You got another representative here that wants to sit down next to you. Go ahead. Sit right down there. Stay right there. Let him get the chance first, and you can follow up after him if that's okay. Go ahead, Doc.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. I probably have nearly as many small independent one-man log truck operators in my district as anybody in the state, and this is a bill. I'm a sponsor on this bill because of the problems they're having. They're just being forced out of business because of the high costs. And you heard testimony on the cost of the state industrial accident.
We think this is a good deal. It'll give them a chance to be competitive and continue to operate and perhaps make enough money so they at least earn wages instead of being forced out of the business. I would urge your support.
Thanks, Don.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
Well, I'm Doyle Green from Springfield, Oregon. And really, my biggest gripe on this is what happened to our American rights. And what I mean by this is all that's involved here is us and our family. Why should we be forced to carry something that's a 10-hour base coverage when we can get the same thing, basically, on a 24-hour coverage? And this state is costing us just about twice as much as what this other private insurance cost us.
Is there any other questions?
No.
Go ahead, Mr. Green. Are you done?
Yeah, I'm through.
Okay, go ahead.
The question that would come to my mind was prompted by comments by Representative Rogers. In other words, your private insurance is not covering you now for on-the-job accidents. And if you were to drop state comp, I would assume that those rates, with all those premium rates, would also go up on the private insurance.
Well, my private insurance right now covers me 24 hours a day, on the job or off the job. It just depends on whether the state steps in and takes over or what.
But the point I'm trying to make is that your private insurance company assumes that the state is going to be in there to take over if you are injured on the job.
Right.
Therefore, your rates are probably much lower than they would be if the private insurer knew that you had it. They had to go ahead and pick up that coverage.
The way I understand it, on the state industrial, the only way that I'll gain through SAFE is in case I lose, say, a limb or something like this. Then state will possibly give me a little bit more overhead than what my private insurance will. But with the difference in the rate on this here and what we got on the private insurance, it just isn't in the books. And it's just, really, it's just shoving it right down our throats. And I think as a private individual, a guy should be entitled to make that decision, whether he wants it or whether he doesn't. And basically, that's just what I've got to say.
Mr. Green, I think that probably the major advantage that you would have, if you would consider an advantage with being covered by the state workers' compensation law, is not a cost factor in that sense. It's the fact that I think the major problem is if you were injured, you lost a limb, they have a vocational rehabilitation program. And I doubt if your private carrier, any coverage you're going to get, is going to fund you through a vocational rehabilitation program, which the state law does if, in fact, you are injured and you qualify for it. And if it takes you 3 or 4 years to be retrained or whatever it takes, they will supply that program for you.
Well, this is true, but I still maintain, as an American citizen, we should have that right to decide whether we do or don't carry it.
Thank you very much, Mr. Green.
You're welcome.
Mr. Bill,
to chair,
go ahead.
I'd like to respond to Representative Otto's question. No, the rate will not increase. The rate is fixed because it's based on a 24-hour coverage, even though there is an exclusion for a workman's comp, any claim that would be paid by a government program. But the rates for the private plan will not increase.
Would you put that in writing, Representative?
Yes, sir.
The other question I have, Mr. Chairman, on line 4, all workmen are subject to ORS such and such, except those non-subject workmen described in the following subsections. If this bill were to pass, would it mean that these log truck drivers would be excluded from the workman's comp program, or would it be optional? They could elect to come under workman's comp or under a private insurer.
They would be completely opted out from the coverage, and there would be no option at all. It would just be that they're not subject workmen.
In other words, if this bill were to pass, they would not have the option of workman's comp. I'm safe.
No, that's not correct, because there is another section of the law, and if I can, it's ORS. Yes. If I can find it. Yes, 656.140, it begins, any person or persons operating as partners, okay, and it goes on to say that they may independently on their own opt in under the law if they want, but there is no legal requirement for them to do that.
Okay, but it would be optional on their part.
Yes, they could do that. I read that the other night. Mr. Perkins? Mr. Sagner, if you, there's a bill right here, you know the question I asked you about establishing a minimum coverage. I got went down and had her get a copy of that bill for you. If you look at that and see the way that they're approaching this problem in another industry, and you'll get what I was getting at with your question. Go ahead, sir.
Yes, my name is Wes Perkins, and I'm from Creswell, Oregon. And I'm an independent owner-operator. I'm darn proud of it. I wouldn't be interested in being an employee, and far as I'm concerned, except for this one particular law of this state industrial, this workman's comp, that I am an independent trucker. I haul for whom I want and where I want within my authority. I go where I can make the best living for myself. I am tied to nobody from a contract. I operate solely for myself, and I'm in favor of this bill. And I think I have the right to choose who and where I want to buy my insurance. I'm paying $280 a month. I know that I can take that $200 and $280 a month and spend it and go a lot further with it and still have money in my pocket. And I feel I don't have no use for unemployment insurance. I make my living this way. I don't want no part of nothing. So I figured that since I'm independent everywhere else, that I should be able to buy my insurance where I want.
Thank you, Perkins.
Mr. Perkins, where do you live, Creswell?
I live on Mintz Hollow Road between Cottage Grove and Creswell. I have a Cottage Grove phone number with a Creswell address.
I was just trying to establish whether you're his constituent or mine. You're mine.
Well, you're too Roger. What he's trying to say is direct all correspondence.
I actually, I was kind of hoping you were in his. I'm with you. And I'm
Mr. Moore?
Frank Moore from Pendleton, Oregon. I'm a one-truck owner-operator, and I just believe that I should have the right to choose my insurance, being safe and some from private carrier.
Do you presently have your own coverage?
Yeah, I have
Safe.
Yeah.
Okay. Let me ask you, in talking with the other people around the state, is it a fairly common practice that the logger requires you people to have safe coverage before he will contract with you?
In our area, the mill requires that the logger make sure that we have it.
Okay. So they are, before you can even get a contract with them, they're requiring you to show an employee number and coverage with the state accident insurance fund.
And you can't get in the woods without it.
Okay. Thank you very much. Mr. Warnick?
My name is G.R. Warnock. I'm an independent contractor and operator from Baker, Oregon. I'm in favor of this bill all the way, and I'd like to thank Representative Markham for presenting it. Under the law, we have to carry a state comp, or the logger we haul for is required to carry it on us, which It's a heck of a lot cheaper for us to pay on an assumed wage, which we do, as it would be for the logger to pay on our gross wage. So by law we are required to carry this. We do not have an option at all. Of course, this This does come out on the finished product cost. It takes a while to get down the line, but it's there. And I feel that I am an employer and not an employee. If I'm hurt on the job, I have and can hire a man to drive my truck, which of course does make me an employer. The cost of this insurance, of course, you've heard $278.56 a month, along with my private insurance, for myself and my family, I'm paying $345.99 a month, which is pretty darn steep for a small businessman. And the way the inflation is nowadays, why it's getting ever harder to succeed in this business. So any cost we can save, of course, is going to help us, and it's going to go right down through and help inflation also. Another thing. Maybe I shouldn't bring this up, but I'm going to. Right now, we are paying on approximately $10,400 a year, and the way things are looking, and of course, seems like SAFE always gets their way. I think probably by midsummer, we're going to be paying on $15,600 a year, which is, of course, going to be that much rougher on us. And I'd like to state that I don't care about paying into unemployment or drawing it. If I can't succeed in this business, which I have for 6 years, I'll find something else.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Gary.
Why is it going to 15.6?
Well, I can't truthfully answer that. I think that possibly the state thinks we're netting more money than we are, which I think if they took an average, why they would find maybe we're paying on more than we're making now on an average basis.
Have you've been notified that that's what it's going to, though?
Yes, I have. I've
been notified by SAFE. You've been notified by your association. Mr. McCullough is signed as a witness, I assume.
Yes, he is.
Okay. Thank you. I'll direct you.
I have a question.
Yes,
you mentioned that you're an owner-operator, and if you're sick, you could hire someone else to take over, right?
That's correct.
I guess my concern is this. If you're not under SAFE, and you are sick, you hire someone else to drive your truck for you, then you probably hate to fill out forms as much as I do. I'm concerned about the person that you would hire. Would you?
Well, Representative, by law, of course.
But I also know the law can be evaded.
Well, that's true. But I think myself and my fellow members here try to abide by the law to their utmost. And I would not jeopardize myself or my family or anybody else that I would trust with my equipment to send them out on a job without coverage. No, I definitely would comply with the law there and furnish state accident anytime it was on my equipment, because it wouldn't only be their neck, it would be mine for sure.
I guess another question, and you're probably not the one to answer, maybe Chuck Gill, and that would be that say that you were going for a period of a year or 2 years and you were operating your own vehicle and you wanted to take a vacation or you were ill or injured or something, then you'd go under workman's comp. And my question, I guess, to Chuck Gill or someone more familiar with workman's comp than I am, would there be any waiting period before that the employee that you hired to take your place would have to wait before he could legally drive your equipment?
There is not at this time, Representative.
Okay.
We have that option on our coverage.
Yeah.
We have a number as an employer, not an employee. The way the law is now, we are in fact an employee in our own business.
You know, I realize that, but I'm just wondering if you were to go to another insurer, if there'd be any time lag between the time you could legally hire an employee
Well, at this time, there is not. That is an option on our coverage.
Okay, well, I'm sure there's people in the audience that could answer that, too.
Thank you very much. George, go ahead.
Suddenly, like on Sunday, you discover that you got sick and you're not going to be able to work on Monday, so you call up some person that you've gotten arranged with that's offered to work for you and probably has in the past. Is he covered then Monday as an employee?
Definitely. He would not go out on my equipment without being covered. I have a lot of money in my whole life invested in this, in this business, and I'm not going to risk my business, you know, for a day's work, for sure, or a week's work. The man definitely would not go out on my equipment without being covered, and I don't think any other...
It can trigger instantly, is that correct?
Yes, I'm sure it does. I'm positive of it.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Warner. Is it Ed Spencer? Spinner? Sorry,
Spinner.
I'm Ed Spinner, state in Oregon, owner-operator. I'm in favor of this bill. But if we don't get something changed here, us owner-operators are going to go down the tube.
You only have one truck?
One truck.
Thank you very much, Mr. Spencer. Mr. Dale Zumwalt?
I'm Dale Zumwalt. I'm from Hillsboro, Oregon. I'd like to talk a little bit about things that haven't been talked about here before yet. I have a self-loader. First of all, I'd like to say I support this bill 100%. I have a self-loader, and I haul for a lot of small contractors, even people like you that might have as much as one tree in your backyard. And it would be for your protection to pass this bill, because you're responsible for me with that. Without having the way it is now, you're responsible for me. And I think most people don't realize that, being that they think they automatically assume that I am that I've taken care of all that, but I haven't. I've been in business for 17 years, and so far, there's only been one guy that I can truthfully say of these small operators that realized that he was to cover me when I went on his job, and that's in 17 years. There are some of the larger contractors that they obviously realize that. I do carry my own insurance, and it does cover me 24 hours a day and on the job, because I have been hurt on the job and I've tested that part of it. In regard to the question you asked Paul Sager on restrictions as to the amount of private insurance you have, I would be completely against that, because you're just getting back into the same situation you're in right now, that where they require the state accident for, especially on these larger jobs. Any questions?
Thank you very much, sir, Mr. Sumwalt.
Yeah, I got a question.
George, go ahead.
You said you contract with several different producers, operators?
Right. I have a self-loading log truck.
Yeah, I understand what that is.
Mm-hmm.
The question is, others have mentioned that they've got a license and can operate in a number of counties. And I was kind of curious as to how the jobs were developed. Are they put up for bid and you bid on them, or do you...
No. In the larger jobs, they probably are. But in the smaller jobs, where a farmer goes out and cuts his woodlot and that, he just knows that I've been in business for years. He calls me and says, "Hey, I got some logs here, come and haul them when you can." And that's the way I do it. And then I send him usually I set their, after they're hauled, I tell him how much it's going to be.
And under those circumstances, then he is liable for any injuries that you might
suffer
while on his property.
Because I do not have a, I do not have insurance with the state on my sale.
And do you ask them if they have that protection?
No, no, because I have taken care of that through a private insurance policy, just like everybody is proposing to do here now.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Zumwalt, then you're saying that you don't haul for anyone who requires that you have your own certificate?
No, okay. No.
It appears to me from the testimony today that it's treated differently in different parts of the state. It's obvious that over in Eastern Oregon they require that employer's number.
They do here where I'm from too, if you were working for a larger company.
Okay.
But I'm working for these small contractors. They have no idea that I'm not in take care of my own affairs, you know, that they
but you're not carrying your own coverage.
Right. Or with the state.
Yeah.
They don't realize that they're responsible for it either.
Mr. Chairman, I'm confused. You don't carry any kind of workman's compensation coverage?
Not
under the state law?
No.
How do you escape?
You haven't caught him yet.
No. I guess that'd be simple. I don't work for people that they're just small contractors. I don't really know how to tell you that.
But it's very easy.
That's the way it is. And
under the present law, you're not required to do it. And the present law, the employer, it's his responsibility.
That's what I tried to tell you, if you hired me to come and haul your tree out of your backyard, you're responsible for me the way it is. But see, most people don't realize that. And it would be a benefit to the public to change this, because they're the ones that are responsible, the ones that I haul for right now, these small contractors.
But you are an owner-operator.
Oh, definitely.
You know, I understand what you're saying. And I understand what you're saying, but there's some problem here. Is Mr. Gill on the agenda?
Yeah, he's going to. Put it this way. If the compliance division of the board comes out looking for who is not paying insurance, they're never going to see Mr. Zumwalt. They're going to go look for the guy who's employed him, and they're never going to talk to him. And
But he's an owner-operator.
Yeah, but under the law, then he's not the one that's responsible for carrying the coverage. The logger is, or the mill. Is the one that is responsible, and what happens is these people contract with him. The logger or the mill operator owner thinks that Mr. Zumwalt's carrying the coverage, and no one says anything until someone files a claim. And that's where the whole process starts, because if he files a claim with the board, what happens is that they come in and they see who he's been employed by, and even though Mr. Zumwalt says, I'm an independent owner operator, the board says, that doesn't help. And
I
go back
on a claim because I have this private insurance.
Yeah, I understand that. But the only difference, you're saying, between Mr. Zumwalt and any of the regular log truck drivers that we've heard from up to this point is that the other log truck drivers are denied the opportunity to work until they produce a certificate.
Right.
So it's not the law that's forced them. It's the people that they're hauling for.
That's right.
Absolutely. Is that what you're saying?
That's right. That's exactly what's happening. It's treated differently in different...
I'm not... I'd like to pursue that a little further.
Okay.
Because
Chuck's going to be here, and as soon as...
We
always get the guys up here like yourself that always have to answer all the questions for everybody else. I appreciate it, Mr. Zump. Mr. Zump,
no, I'm not. I'm just going to make a comment. I appreciate you bringing up a point that I hadn't considered before, this liability of the individual who uses your services, because I hadn't looked at that from that particular aspect. I appreciate that.
Mr. Lucan, is it Howard Lucan?
Don't get
come on.
No, I'm not.
brother of Robert.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay.
That's right. Well, you got me at a disadvantage. I never sat and talked to a bunch of
guys all doing what I've been used to before. You won't believe this, but the reason we wore these ties is for you.
Well, hell, you should have just put on your cowboy boots, you know? I'm going down here and get in the common folk, you know? Anyway, I'm for this bill. I don't know about the rest of these truckers out here, but you lay out this $280 a month and then stack a $900 a month truck payment on it, and you take that out off the top, and it don't leave you nothing to eat on. And yeah, this gets me right here, don't it?
Relax.
Anyway, you go to work for a guy like I worked for out of Clamp Falls, and they told me if I didn't carry workman's comp, that I couldn't work for him. Period. That's it. Go park it. And all of the outfits in Clamp Falls were that way.
Or do you live in Clamp
yourself? Yeah.
Okay.
I have a question.
Yes, go ahead.
We heard from previous witnesses about the California drivers coming into Klamath Falls and being in competition with you people. Do any of you people go into Northern California?
Yeah, we go into Northern California and haul back to Oregon. But we do not go into California and haul within California.
They're hauling not that I know California into Oregon.
We haul from California back to Oregon. They run in an outfit down there was trying to get a permit that had 500 trucks, and they were going to bring them up there, and that was going to put Putman and Quadras and my brother and everybody else out of business.
One question I have: where you are hauling in California, you would not be subject to their workman's comp laws where you could get a lower rate?
I don't know that.
Let me ask you a question on that, Mr. Lincoln. If when you go into California, are you hauling for a California logger, or are you calling for a Oregon logger who is merely contracted in California and had the logs brought up here?
It's an Oregon-based logger.
Okay, it's a log. Okay.
Yeah, it's usually... Like, you get down in California, and them guys are, they hang together like a bunch of flies, you know. You go down there, and they run right back. You go down there and hold it. They ain't near as nice as we are up here. Yeah, that's true. And then the state, you know, the state comes in, and I look at this thing like a tax. You know, they stick this on me. That if I got hurt, what the state would pay me wouldn't make my truck payment. I couldn't pay a tire bill with what the state would give me. So I'm 100% for this. I want to be able to go get my insurance where I want it. I'll tell you what happened to me. I went and got some insurance. When I first bought my truck, it cost me $85 a month. It gave me, I think it was $15,000 live, 24-hour coverage. And if I got hurt on the job, it gave me 2/3 of my gross income on my truck. Now, these guys back here know what you can gross with one. I can make more money being hurt through my private insurance.
Will they make the payment on your truck?
Hell no, I can make it myself.
Out of the 2/3?
You bet.
Mr. Taylor?
Yes, Gary.
What did you think would be an average gross income in a month for a log? Gross. For expenses. $5,000 a month?
My truck?
Or? Well, average. I don't want to play anybody's.
I don't know what the boys from up north are.
How much?
$4,000 to $5,000 a month then.
It's about $4,000.
So just wanted to make the point that it's, that, you know, you're not dealing with peanuts. So.
Yeah, you're not. These guys ain't got some. You know, we might get up here and stutter and cough and joke, you know, talking to you guys, but these guys are businessmen back here, and they ain't stupid, you know, and they treat them like a bunch of little babies. You know, they say, by God, you're going to have this amount of insurance, or you ain't going to work. We're going to take your toy away from you. And you take a $70,000 piece of machinery, ain't no toy.
Thank you very much. I appreciate you coming up today.
I don't look forward to it ever again.
Mr. Charles Huntington?
Chairman? Mr. Chairman, it'd be more interesting if we had witnesses like this every day.
That's right. Well, I think next time we'll go down to Klamath Falls.
That's a good idea, Mr. Chairman.
Well, on second thought, I don't know about that.
Hello, Mr. Huntington. Thank you, sir.
I'm Charles Huntington. Live in Eugene, Oregon. And I'm an owner-operator, one logging truck. I have been for 30 years. Sometimes in one day, I will haul for two operators, two contractors. There was a question here. We have to guarantee our insurance. Winter before last, I was out jippoing around. Three different mills. As soon as they found out in the office I was hauling there, which usually takes a day or two, I got a letter. You will give us a list of your insurance coverage or you will not haul here. And I have always carried stomp insurance. Well, I'll say for the last 10 years I have carried it. The first time I ran into this, if you don't carry your own, you don't work on this job.
Is that a logger in Lane County?
Yes. In this 30 years, it's all been in Lane County, with the exception of 3 or 4 months. One winter I went over to John Day. Can say that 30 years has been in the Lane County area. And the thing I was like is, if you would please give us the option to run our own business and insure ourselves the way we choose. I'm going to carry it. I'm an amputee, was hurt on the job, and I know that we've got to carry it.
Did you just want the option to?
Yes, just the option to run our own business and insure the way that we choose. I've brought my insurance bill from April here. And for me, it runs to $251.08. I am covered private insurance compensation.
Okay. Thank you very much,
Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
Chuck, who's driving your truck today while you're up here?
It seems like somebody up here in the legislature said that we had to take the day off.
You got to take the day off?
Yeah, this is a holiday.
Oh, my goodness, I didn't know that. The logging crews are all working, though. Just the shovel operators and some of them
will be cold decking, but yeah. any holiday, we cannot get a logging truck
on the road.
Highway.
Hmm.
The only truck in Oregon that can't go on the road on Saturday afternoons or Sundays or holidays.
I just wanted to make the point, Chuck. Okay.
Thank you. Thank you. It's a good point. Thank you for bringing it up.
Thank you, Chuck. Mr. Leonard Hetler?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Leonard Hetler from Silverton, Oregon.
And I'm in favor of this bill as it stands. I do think we need it. And I'm a little concerned about this percentages of ownership to define, make a definition for an owner-operator. Myself, I'm in business with two of my brothers. And when Representative Otto said maybe 50%, well, I didn't think too much of that because I'm only 33 and a third percent at the present time. That would, wouldn't work for us, so I think it should be something more than 50%. But I do feel that it should be equal ownership because if there were two and one was 1/50th, then the man that was 1/50th, he would be like an employee. It would work out that way. But however, Mr. French said it in a court, it wouldn't uphold, so that wouldn't work out either.
How many rigs do you own?
We just run one truck, but we're logging operators mostly.
Yeah. Your partnership in the rest of the operation.
We have a corporation. It's similar to a partnership. That's about all I have.
Okay. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
I bring up a question on being a corporation. It's in a corporation. Would they be exempt under this?
Officers.
Any person or persons operating as partners?
No, I don't think so.
Well, are you? Well, now that he's incorporated, there'd be no way that he could get out from under this, get out from under SAFE.
Well, I think there's another exemption in the law, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay. 6-5.
I believe that
it's sub seven.
Top five corporate officers are exempt.
Yeah, if you look at the bill, line 28, I think they're picking them up, your situation. Thank you very much.
Well, now, Mr. Chairman, go
ahead.
You are paying.
No, we're not.
You are not paying.
Not paying.
Is that the reason that you're exempt is 656027 sub 7, which says that officers of corporations are exempt?
Well, that is the reason, and another reason that we don't pay is because we don't go out and use our truck to haul for other people. We haul only our own logs. Okay.
That's what I thought.
But we have the right to do that. We have a permit to go in several counties, and we have a right to do that, and we may do this. But I'm in favor of this bill because we wouldn't have any problem going out and hauling for hire.
Okay. You don't employ anybody else?
No, we
wouldn't. Just the three
just
brothers.
Right.
And you're all the officers in the corporation.
Right. Right.
Smart. Thank you very much.
Very smart.
He's got it set up right. Mr. Joe Spinner.
Mr. Chairman, I'm Joe Spinner from 15016 Coon Hollow Road, Southeast, State in Oregon. I'm Vice President of Taxpayers Protective Association of Oregon Incorporated. We've been waiting for a long time to see this type of bill come through the legislature, where people want to stand on their own feet rather than get on a welfare program and stand on a taxpayer's feet. And we're 100% behind this. We hope that you pass it. It's very refreshing to see people take the initiative on their private gumption and get this kind of action going. And I know that it has been working a hardship on some of these people where they are forced to pay this extra fee when they can get comparable or even better insurance programs and benefits on their own. So we would certainly stand behind the people who are putting this bill through. It's very short, very clear, easy to understand, and very commendable of these people who come from all over Oregon on a holiday to take this action.
Thank you, Mr. Spinner.
Mr. Chairman, one question for Mr. Spinner. What you're actually saying is you would like to see the law exempt any self-employed individual. Yes.
Okay. Mr. Spinner, I hope to get to the other bill you signed up for today, and I'm going to try to do that because I know you've come down here to testify on 297. So if we can wait, I'm going to try and reserve about 10 or 15 minutes for you to speak on that bill that you signed up for on that one.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Hugh Sagner.
I'm Hugh Sagner from Boring, Oregon, independent trucker. I don't know what I can add to what everybody else has said here today, other than I'm for it 100%. The state is, in respect, forcing us to insure ourselves twice. Where, myself, I have two life insurance policies with dismemberment clauses, health and accident, 24 hours a day, and yet I have to pay the high cost of the state. And either that or I don't work. I'm in favor of it 100%. I think we need it very badly.
Thank you, Mr. Sagner. Now, if I am correct, and I've gone down the list, other than Mr. French, Mr. McKellar, and Mr. Fredericks, and Mr. Kennedy, I believe everyone who signed up has had an opportunity to testify. I'm going to ask you, is there anybody that has come from out of town to testify on this bill that has not signed up and would like to come forward and testify? Okay. Bob McKellar, is he here right now? Bob, why don't you come on over? Do you want to bring...
Joe French?
Yeah, Joe French with you. Joe, why don't you come on up, both of you together? Why don't you both state your names and then maybe your...
My name is Robert McKellar, Executive Secretary of Oregon Log Truckers Association, P.O. Box 2167, Salem, Oregon 97308.
My name is Joe French. Work for Oregon Log Truckers Association. My address is P.O. Box 2167, Salem, Oregon.
Okay. Go ahead. However you want to do it. Bob, you want to speak first? And
pull it, Joe.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I have a statement.
What are they doing?
I had a written statement which we will pass out to the committee. Did have.
Move all the way.
Go ahead, Bob.
Testimony in support of House Bill 2820. The Oregon Log Truckers Association requests that the House Labor Committee send HB 2820 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. HB 2820 would classify the log truckers, as well as other groups who own and operate equipment for hire, as non-subject workers for the purpose of workman's compensation. This bill would clarify the situation for both the log trucker and the party he contracts with to supply his services. The courts have been deciding each case on its individual merits, and the status of the log trucker has alternatively been determined to be an independent contractor and an employee. There are a number of reasons OLTA supports HB 2820. First of all, the log trucker considers himself to be a self-employed person, and his status has been recognized by other governmental agencies. Second, after discussing HB 2820 with some workman's compensation carriers, they had no serious objections to the bill. There was general agreement that the problem could be clarified by allowing the log trucker, and again I'm speaking of the owner-operator, the opportunity to make his own decision regarding coverage. Other reasons for supporting HB 2820 is one, if a single operator carries his own insurance, there would be a greater incentive for safety. And I'm talking now of private insurance, not workman's comp. Also, since liability is equally divided under these circumstances, the incentive for safety should be equally shared between the log trucker and the party contracting for his services. Two, as already has been brought out, for unemployment compensation purposes, 657-047, log truckers are specifically excluded from eligibility for unemployment insurance as self-employed persons. In other words, for workman's comp purposes, this owner-operator, by law, is declared to be an employee. However, this same employee cannot go to the unemployment compensation people and say, I am an employee, I want some unemployment compensation. So he's a split personality, I guess. Three, the IRS has some financial guidelines which determine the independent contractor status, and these requirements may also be applied to the log trucker.
Joe?
Yes.
Before you get on, who put the exemption in the ORA 657047? Who lobbied for that? Was that your association?
No, that was passed, I think, 20 or 25 years ago. As I understand it, that was before my time. I think it was mills and loggers. I'm not sure.
They put it in themselves.
Yes. I don't think that, I think, Mr. Chairman, at that time, there were no log truckers associations, and I'm sure that they had very little to do with it.
For those of you, I'm sorry I used the statutory number. I asked the question of who put the exemption from unemployment compensation into the statute. And that's what I was trying to get at. Go ahead.
The IRS on page 2 of an independent contractor is A, owns his own equipment, B, is responsible for the maintenance of this equipment, C, carries the burden of all expenses, repairs, insurance, and personal, D, supplies the necessary services to operate the equipment. He is compensated on fee base on the distance of a haul or the number of deliveries or a division of gross revenue. F, also establishes the details surrounding the performance of the work. 4, the National Labor Relations Board has similarly determined owner-operators to be independent contractors. The NLRB uses the right of control over the means of performing the service as a major factor in establishing independent status. We do have some cases that we'd be glad to supply the committee with. The NLRB spoke of cases in which a owner-operator was leasing his truck and then being paid on a percentage, and the question was, he an employee for...
Is that the West Coast case?
It is the...
Teamsters 57.
Yes, right. No, yes, we have that one, and we have the George transfer case.
Our firm represents. Go ahead.
Okay. Anyway, we have those cases. We'd be glad to supply the committee. 5, court decisions previously agreed that the log trucker was an independent. However, now determining factors have been added which further confuse the issue. The right of control has been the main factor until the issue of social welfare legislation was introduced and the nature of the work was re-examined and found to imply an owner or an employer-employee relationship. The legislature felt the statutory distinction was sufficient one time. However, the courts do not seem to be able to apply a consistent interpretation. It is for this reason that HB 2820 is needed. The log trucker's status would be clearly defined within the statute, and the necessity of litigating each case would no longer be a burden. And as the committee is probably aware, prior to 1947, the owner-operator log trucker was considered an independent contractor, ran his own business, so on and so on. Then when the Bowser case was decided in 1947, they went into some long gyrations about how do you tell the difference between an independent contractor and an employee, and finally they boiled it down to the right of control. Who has the right of control? And that case after that decided that apparently there was a right of control, and they held that the owner-operator log trucker, at least in that case, was an independent contractor.
Joe, could you distinguish between the right to control and actual control?
Well, the right to control, actual control, is where you tell the man, you will do this, you do this, and do that. And I guess the right to control is where it's implied that he has that right.
And he never exercises it.
He never exercises it. And it's, I guess, something implied in the law. He doesn't have to post it on the bulletin board with a large number of rules, do this, do this, and do this, but it is implied that will be done. Then along came the Butts case, which was a party furnishing his own tractor, skidding logs. And in that case, they talked about the Bowser case. We have the right to control this man. And then suddenly they start talking some other factors. Well,
the right to control seems to be confusing, so we'll have to go to some secondary tests, which means do the parties have the right to terminate the agreement? What was his job? Was he contracting for the for a certain amount of business, or was he to do a certain thing every day? And in that case, they held, no, he's an independent contractor.
Joe, were those standards the common law test, or is the court looking at the statutory scheme?
Well, I think they were looking at some of the common law tests.
Were they?
And there were other cases, of course, that were split in other states on, again, what is meant by the right of control. And the right of control is a very, sounds reasonable, sounds easy to define, but I, after reading these cases, it can be very confusing, and the court speaks of right of control must be decided on the facts of each case.
Does the IRS require your independent owner-operator, do they apply the common law test for independent contractor basis, don't they?
Yeah, they do.
So what they're doing is that they're being determined to be independent contractors as far as the IRS is concerned, and in the and for unemployment, they're independent contractors, but for workman's comp, they're being viewed as employees.
That's right.
Glenn, go ahead.
Under number one on the first page, one question or one sentence here raises a question. Also, since liability is equally divided under these circumstances, the incentives for safety should be equally shared between the log trucker and the party contracting for his services. Are you saying here that there is now a divided liability?
No, I'm saying that that probably there is not a divided liability, but I think that each party is more or less responsible to keep himself in a safe operation so that the log trucker will be safe and not cause any injuries, and the logger who he's contracting for certainly should keep his operation up to snuff and not cause any injury.
Well, then that sentence is misleading in that respect.
Well, if you want to put it in that vein, I guess you could say that statement, yes.
Mr. French? What do you mean by a single operator, an operator of one?
A single operator is a party who owns his own truck, drives his own truck, and operates his own truck, and usually repairs his own truck, and does everything in that vein. That's his own business, and in some respects, I guess you'd call him a sole proprietor. Although there is an exemption in the workman's compensation law that says sole proprietor is exempt. So the question has been asked, if you are a log truck owner-operator, why aren't you a sole proprietor? What does that word mean? Well, the law is founded on technicalities, I guess, and it gets more technical in the workman's compensation law. And a sole proprietor, as I gather it, in that exemption in the workman's compensation statute, would mean where you have a business with some employees, and merely if you had a business by yourself, and of course in the log trucking field, where you're an owner-operator and you're sole proprietor, it doesn't mean what it says. So you're, by court decision, you are still considered an employee.
Here's what baffles me. In your statement says, if a single operator carries his own insurance, there must be a greater incentive for safety. What does that mean?
Well, I think, first of all, if he is carrying, let's assume that the logger is carrying the insurance and paying the workman's compensation insurance. One of them must carry it now,
yeah,
according to the law. Then I would think that the party who is working for the logger, and if the logger is carrying the insurance, may not have the same incentive for safety. And I think more important that we're talking about people who have their own business. This is their own livelihood, and they are independent businessmen, and they certainly have a greater feeling that they are the breadwinner in the family, that they want to be safe, they want to, they work on their own equipment, and they want it in a safe condition, and it is not like a true employee who will drive a truck that he's never worked on, or maybe change his truck, not familiar with it. And what we're saying is that if this bill passes, we think that the owner-operator would conduct himself in a safe manner, because he knows that he is the breadwinner of the family, and as I say, knows his operation better than anybody else.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Representative Wilhelm.
The question was asked earlier, if this bill were to pass just the way it is, whether or not an owner-operator would have the option. And I think the answer was given that the owner-operator would not have the option.
No, that's incorrect. If the bill passes under ORS 656-140, he would still have an option to cover himself, even though he has been excluded out as a workman.
Right.
And that way, he could go to a party who wants to hire him and say, under the law that was passed, I am not a workman, so you do not have to worry about paying back premiums on me. I'm a true independent contractor. The law is clarified, and I don't want to carry any workman's comp. And the logger party hiring him says, fine, it's fine with me. Or they could negotiate, and the man, if he wanted to carry his own, could carry it without any liability on the part of the logger being involved.
Joe, just a second before you get on. The question that was asked is whether the employee, where the owner-operator is going to have an option under the statute. Now, under the statute of employer, he has no option, because the bill expressly excludes him from the definition of covered employer, employment. Now, what you do, though, is you pick up in 656-140, you pick up an option for him. It's an option.
Okay, right.
To come back in.
Equipment.
That's right. But right. He is excluded from the law,
okay.
But he does have, under 140, the opportunity, if he wants to be covered himself,
right. Okay.
To come back in. And that's what the question that Representative Wilhelm's
right.
asked earlier, in which
right.
I responded to.
Yeah, but he would have an option to cover himself. He wouldn't be out in the cold with
it. It wouldn't be an option if, in fact, he was as it says, would not be a subject employer.
Okay.
Oh, subject workman, excuse me.
Right. So I don't think, okay, we're talking language.
It's semantics, I
agree. Right. Well, that's how lawyers talk, I guess. No one understands us, that's why.
Mm-hmm.
But under 656...
They couldn't make a living if they did.
I...
We
just
voted. I'm sorry, go ahead. No. Go ahead.
But under 656-140, and again, regardless of what you would call this person, it says any person who operates this equipment and furnishes it would be in a position to cover himself, even though he's excluded out as a workman under the workman's compensation law. Now, where this thing again boiled over was last year, in 1975, we had the exact case. After all this Bowser case, which supposedly decided the law that an owner-operator is an employee for workman's compensation purposes. Then we have the Butts case, which throws some doubts into that, even though it wasn't an owner-operator. Then we have the IRS decision saying that apparently this type of person is an independent contractor. We have these National Labor Relations cases, which say apparently he is an independent contractor. Then we have the Woody versus Wyoming case that was decided by the Court of Appeals. And in that case, we get back again. It says, well, this question is decided on the right of control. And then it says the right of control was not sufficient. So then we'll have to use the secondary test, which are, do they have the right to terminate the contract? Did the injured workman determine his own hours of employment? There's about 9 or 10 tests. And then we get down to the magic words. It says, each case must be determined on its own facts as to whether this man is an independent contractor or whether he is an employee. The case was appealed to the Supreme Court,
And Justice O'Connell wrote an opinion in which he talks of the right of control, talks of each individual case, and then he goes through that apparently the person was a workman because he was an integral part of the whole operation. But again, it is our contention that that really doesn't solve this problem, because in this language of the Woody Wyable case, the final decision, they talked about that this log trucker goes to work for the same logger year in and year out. All right, my question is, and you've heard today, what happens when these people change loggers or they change jobs during the season? What would happen to the Woody Wyable case if, again, this was litigated with a different set of facts? I'm not sure we have the matter settled yet. And we feel that this bill would definitely settle the matter. It would give strong guidelines as to what an independent contractor is or what a employee is for workman's compensation purposes. And then based on that, it does not exclude the owner-operator log trucker. If he so desires coverage, he still has the option to do it, but he isn't forced to take it, as he is now under this peculiar flux of the law, which is very confusing. And again, pointing out the unemployment compensation law, he is not an employee, but under workman's comp, he is an employee. The public, who doesn't really know what he is. And from all practical purposes, the industry considers themselves independent contractors, and I think we should listen to the will of the industry. We feel the court decision is still clouded, is not a proper definition of the term, and that the legislature should set the policy of what a person is, and we think that this bill would so do it.
Joe, let me talk to you very briefly, because I'm going to bring Chuck Gill in here now, and I want to talk to him for a while. I'm just going to speak as one individual. I think the bill, I know where you picked up the language out of 656.140, and I personally believe it's much too broad if you want to accomplish what you're trying to accomplish. I happen to believe that there's merit with your people, and I'm willing to see that we get something on that. The way the bill's drafted, I think that you're picking up so many other different
Mr. Chairman,
operators, and
there's a severe problem. We'd have no objection to deleting everything but the law.
Okay. Now, my next question is, I want you to look at the unemployment under 657.047. Look under that statute and see if we could pick up an exemption on
using that same language,
using that procedure rather than the way you're going about it. I'm talking to you both for just how I feel personally and also politically. And I think Bob knows what I'm talking about, that you've just got an awful, awful large number of people. I was trying to figure out why Jack Kalinowski was sitting through this whole hearing, and now I understand after reading the bill. And I just don't think that...
He came here to testify on our side if we needed him.
Oh, I know. He should, after reading the bill. There's a good reason why he'd want you to testify on behalf of this, but I'm just saying it. Look at an amendment that way, and I'm willing to do that.
You alluded to the fact that you had a problem earlier this year where we had 500 drivers that were... Somebody that owned 500 trucks was going to come from California, or one of the other people did. You know what the compact is that the state of Oregon has with the states of Idaho, Washington, and California that allows people to do business with their coverage in the state of Oregon?
I don't know. Mr. Gill probably can answer. It's my understanding that if you have workman's comp in Oregon and you go to California, and I'm not sure of this, if you go to California and come back to Oregon, you can use your Oregon workman's comp. I'm not sure if you become a permanent resident of California, whether then you can say, well, I know you couldn't, but I know of a couple cases of where a logger has gone down to California for 6 months with the understanding he's coming back to Oregon. And
I think he can still use his Oregon compensation, although I guess Mr. Gill would be better to answer that than me.
Would you be in favor of a California logger that had to come up here, that had to pay your rates rather than their own?
We wouldn't be in favor of any California logger coming up here, log trucker.
Well, but if he did come here, if he had to compete on an equal footing.
Yes.
Thank you very much, Joe.
I'd just like to respond to a question that Representative Wilhelms had earlier concerning the assumed wage. The question, as I recall it, had to do with whether or not the assumed wage was going to raise to $15,600. The assumed wage a year ago was 10-4, and I never get the name of this organization right, but it's the Northwest Compensation
Rating Bureau.
It's a committee of the Bureau who meets and sets this assumed wage. And we appeared before that committee just a year ago, June, and presented them with some rather substantial statistics indicating that the $10,400 or the $15,600 assumed wage was it didn't make any sense at all. They were kind enough to not increase, with respect to the log trucking industry, the assumed wage to $15,600. They left it at 10-4. So this year, the year that we're in right now, the assumed wage for log truckers is $10,400, on which they pay their workman's comp. Everybody else in that category is $15,600. This committee meets, I think, the 28th or 29th of June, when they'll address this question again, and we have no confidence that they're going to allow us to stay at $10,400. So the impact is doubly important here, since we're talking about $32.13 per hundred based on 10-4 now, which is the figures you heard today. And most likely, July 1, it'll be $15,600.
I believe that drives the cost up about $2,200 a year to the average owner-operator.
That's correct.
Here's the calculations based on what the information you see.
That's correct.
Is the authority for doing what you're talking about is ORS 656-140 sub 3, I believe, where it says the fund shall, or the other insurer may accept such application and fix a classification and an assumed monthly wage at which such person or persons operating as partners shall be carried on the payroll as with and for purposes of computation of this chapter. But is that the one?
I believe so, yes. Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Bill.
I've got a point. I was talking with gentleman Bernie Johnson from Klamath Falls, who's out in the hallway. And he brought up the point that on his first job, there was confusion about this thing, and the mill was going to hold out 25% of his first 2 weeks check to cover his workman's comp because he didn't have his own coverage. Now, when we talk about the assumed wage, that's for the logger who covers himself. That's yours. Now, if the mill covers him, it's based on the gross, the gross pay for the hauling, which is considerably different from the net. Okay, how about on the other end, the logger? If the logger is covering the guy, what basis is used there?
What he pays him.
Actual pay.
So whether it's the logger or the mill, it's based on the gross. And so it's to the advantage then of the loggers under the present law to have to cover himself because it costs less.
Well,
I mean the log truck, the owner operator, to his advantage to cover himself under the present law.
Yes, that's kind of right. It costs less to pay more. Right.
Okay.
Thank you. Thank you very much, both of you. Mr. Gill, would you like to come up for a minute, please?
Mr. Chairman, while he's getting in place, I'd like to make a statement here. I'd like for us to get
some action on this bill as quickly as possible, because this is a House bill. We're trying to get wound down, and I'm concerned about this bill getting caught in the crunch between the two houses. So,
Representative Rogers, this bill will be set for hearing just the same as all the other bills that we have in the committee, and it is going to be considered, and I will set the agenda and put it out at that time.
Mr. Chairman, just for the record, you know, we've been talking about what their premiums are a year. Markham just jogged my memory a little bit. We've had testimony here before that the rates were going to go up again, that they possibly could go up as much as 25% or more. And just for the record, the guy said that the average they were paying a year now was about $2,800. If they get re-rated to 15.6 and the premiums go up 25%, they will be paying, on the average, $6,250 a year in workman's compensation premium. Just for the record. And if somebody like Chuck or somebody could put those figures down, I'd love to hear it, because I don't like them very well.
Go ahead, Chuck. My name is Chuck Gill. I'm manager of the State Accident Insurance Fund. Our counsel here with us, Mr. Keith Maloney.
Okay, Chuck, that's as far as we want to go. Bill, would you ask Mr. Gill your question that you had previously asked before you get started? Anita has it down here. Would you ask the question?
The one that I just asked?
No, the one that you earlier had asked concerning...
Independent. He wanted to know if independent log haulers... if loggers that hire individuals to cover...
Okay, you got the question.
Okay, yeah, let me restate the question. If there is an independent owner-operator who has two trucks and he hires someone else to operate one of them on a continuing basis, then does he have to cover himself when he is driving?
No, he does not. Okay. He is then an employer under the law.
Right. That was my understanding. Apparently, there's some misunderstanding amongst the mills and the logging firms then.
There is a concern by the prime contractor, the mill owner, even though you might own a truck, they would just soon you probably elect coverage for yourself, even though you have another truck, another employer. Just in case an accident would occur and they would claim they'd be an employee. But the law says if you're an employer, that you're not a subject workman, and they are employers.
Now, that individual in that instance, though, can elect to cover himself.
Yes, he can.
For workman's comp.
Yes.
Or elect up.
Yes.
Here he can have either option. Okay.
Yes.
Chuck, would you limit your testimony solely to the owner-operator of the log truck? Because I think the bill, as we've recognized, is much broader, but the only one I want to center in on is the log truck.
The language of the bill is the exact language in 140. It's lifted from 140, and while it does affect some of those others, not to the extent it does the independent owner-operator of log trucks. When the law passed in 65, it was felt that they were employers in the normal sense of the word, as we consider independent operators. But they didn't employ anybody. And it came about very shortly after a few cases were filed where an independent operator was hurt, that the court said that he is not an employer, he's a workman of who he's hiring for. And so then they found out in order to continue to operate, they had to have some kind of coverage to protect that contractor they were hiring for, and there was no way for them to get into the law. They weren't an employer. Employers can elect coverage, but they weren't employers. So they were in a dilemma for some time, and Safe provided coverage for them, and we asked them to go hire somebody temporarily, and we'd bring them in, and we'd cover them until the legislature met, and we passed 140. and 140 allowed them to provide coverage for themselves because that's the only way they could get a job. Contractors would not hire them unless they saw that they had the protection by the independent contractor electing coverage for himself. As time went on, of course, the cost of the insurance continued to rise, and it is continuing to rise now. And so they're paying a great deal, but they are an unusual breed. They find themselves, like a lot of employers, owning as much equipment or having as much invested, but not getting recognized in the same fashion as other employers, not having the freedom to make a choice. In order to just run a business, they are forced into saying that they're workmen and to provide coverage for themselves because of their unique situation. There is a consideration that maybe they should have that same right, and this section, this law that was drafted, allows them to do that. Now, what the relationship will be between them and who they hire from after this remains to be seen. They might still be asked to provide coverage. The law should look at them, however, that they are non-subject workmen if this bill passes.
Now, Chuck, let me stop you there. What you're saying is that there's another section of the law, other than this section, that that you're going to be looking at them under as far as their status. Do I understand that correctly?
No, I think this this would just say that they're not subject workmen.
But if they hired another employee to drive another...
They would automatically be an employer.
Okay. And so they would be exempt, but their employee is covered. And they have
their employee is covered, right. But they would not be able to bring suit, I would imagine, against who they're hiring another logger as a workman, because the law says they're not a workman. So the only action they would have would be the normal action of one employer against another employer or some liability suit if that might occur, but not under the workman's comp law.
Mr. Chairman.
Would you go right ahead.
That point that Mr. Gill made right there is extremely important, I believe, that they cannot, if in fact we can set them out as an independent out there, they cannot then file suit with their logger, whoever they're doing business for.
Well, he didn't say that.
Isn't that what you said,
he just
Mr.
said
Gill?
Just the opposite. He said that they can sue him.
Today.
Well,
he said if we pass this bill in whatever form, they would not be able to. Is that what you said, Mr. Gill?
I'll have my counsel clarify it. And,
Representative Markham, no. If the bill passed and the independent owner-operator is going to be considered an independent contractor, he would still have his common law rights to pursue a damage remedy claim against the logger if he was injured on the logger's premises and with the logger's negligence. He reverts to his common law rights.
Only if he's negligent, yes.
If the logger's negligent, yes.
But not as a workman.
That's right.
Yeah. Under the workman's comp law.
Would he still be entitled, the independent operator still be entitled to the remedy under the OSHA as far as safety? If there's a violation of some safety standard or something like that?
He certainly would be subject to the OSHA law, yes.
As far as being able, you know, we have the red tag provision, and we also have another bill in this committee.
I doubt that he would have that remedy. That's embodied in the workman's compensation law and is a remedy for employees. And he's now not an employee under the workman's compensation law.
It'd be strictly a common law right that
right.
He has. Okay, Chuck, go ahead.
I heard several points brought up. The cost of the insurance is certainly not minimal at all, especially if you're a small operator. The costs are if you're having to pay $200 or $300 a month, that's a lot for insurance premium if you're just an individual operator. If you're hiring if you're working for somebody else and covered on their payroll, usually the relationship there, and that was brought out before, is about 25% of the cost is applied as payroll, and the other part of that cost is considered the hire of the equipment. So 25% of that is usually paid for premium purposes. The assumed wage is an application that is used by all insurance carriers through the regulations of the National Council, through their local rating bureau, and apply to all corporate officers and partners and individual owners who elect coverage. It's a basis by which to establish a premium. And it is true, there is consideration of that going up an assumed wage of 10.4 to 15.6, which would be a substantial increase, you're correct, based upon the classification assigned. So it would be a substantial increase from assumed wage of $10,400 to $15,600 if you're paying $32 a hundred. So it's just a simple matter of mathematics to indicate that there would be even greater burden upon these group of employers or individual or independent contractors who then would be forced to provide the coverage. One point I think that should be made out, I think most other independent contractors or employers in the state do have a right to select whatever kind of coverage they want, private or otherwise, and usually to the degree of the individual provide adequate or coverage if they want. But I think I need to point out that the difference in the costs is really the difference of the benefits that are provided by the contract of insurance. And the reason that the cost of workman's compensation insurance is so much greater is that the benefits are so much greater. And while they look the same, there are limits to the liability, usually on a private policy. It's not unusual. There are no limits, as you know, on workman's compensation. And no limits on medical, or no limits on time loss, no limits on permanent disability. They're paid for life. That's a great substantial difference in the cost between the two different insurances.
Chuck, there was a statement you made earlier, and you talked about the 65 law three-way system when it came in. And Mr. French talked about the Bowser case in 47. Prior to 65, and specifically in 47 under SIAC, what was the law on the independent owner-operators for the log truck industry?
We had a section in the law referred to as 124, 656-124. It was taken out of the law at that time and allowed the log hauler or the independent contractor to enter into a formal agreement of the status of the individual at that time. Mr. Maloney dealt with that a great deal and might be able to explain it in a little bit more detail.
Yes, the two parties did get together and sign a statement that the services were going to be performed as an independent contractor. And if that statement was signed and filed with the board, then the person received an injury. He indicated he was an independent contractor. Why he
was there any statutory criteria as far as determining independent owner-operator?
There was some. It was very little. It talked about if the services were for the performance of labor only. It's been a long time since I read that statute, but
let me ask you, in 47, when the Bowser case came down, I read that case some time ago, and I just can't recall it. Was that decided upon the common law scheme, or was it a statutory scheme?
No,
the court found a broader social policy to restrict who independent owner-operators are.
That was decided strictly on the common law standards between a master and servant, what constitutes a master and servant relationship.
Would it be your testimony that there is not a problem so much today with the statutory scheme as it's presently written, other than the fact that they're falling into the ambit of the law, but it's rather we're going to need a statute to reverse the common law
definition?
Well, very definitely, I think the Supreme Court, the Court of Appeals, has made it very clear in the two most recent cases, Woody versus Weibel and Atwood case, that the independent owner-operator of a log truck is an employee.
Under the common law definition?
In Oregon, for workman's compensation purposes.
Chuck, do you have any statistics on the accident rate of owner-operators?
The owner-operators are thrown in, of course, with all other log haulers in that classification, and also are thrown in with all other loggers. So they're in a situation where the information that we might have would be for the classification that embodies a lot of other activity besides just log hauling. With that rate of $32 indicates there's a great deal of losses in that particular classification. However, that doesn't necessarily mean it's log haulers. It's probably primarily in the logging area.
Okay, I should have asked another question first. How many owner-operators do you anticipate there are in the state that if this bill would pass or some version of it, that would be exempt from the definition of subject workman?
Oh, 500, 600, 700,
something like that.
Probably about 700, yes.
Okay, now, I guess since I now have that figure, I'm trying to find a percentage of those that have had accidents and would, if you can give me any kind of an estimate.
No, I can't. I will say this, though, it's probably a very small percentage. Very small percentage.
There's a gentleman back here. Go ahead, sir.
Gentleman.
Why don't you come up here and sit down right next to him? And when you get up here, why don't you put your name on there so I can find out where it's at on the tape? You don't mind, do you, Chuck?
No, not at all.
Okay.
I'd like to ask this gentleman how they can...
Could you state your name again, please?
I'm Bernie Johnson from Fire Falls. I'd like to ask this gentleman how they can take and come up with an estimate on accidents that are brought in on a job, which is just an everyday working job, where with World War II, there was only 10 to 15% of the people that was involved in an active war that come home. There was only 10 or 15% of them that didn't come home with limbs or alive. The other 85 or 95% of them came home in good condition. How can they take and classify an everyday working job with a World War II? That's
Chuck,
what I'd like to know.
Chuck, do you understand the question?
Well, I think he's saying, why in the world are we charging so much for...
That was the question I was just going to say. That's how I was going to phrase it to you.
As I indicated before, the rate is based on a method of estimating the amount of payroll and the losses within a particular activity of work. And in this activity of work, there's a great amount of losses. Now, as I indicated before, it not only includes log hauling, but it includes logging itself.
Do you understand that, what he's just said?
Yeah.
That is, I think, the critical factor in what you're concerned about as to with your particular job.
What I just don't understand is how they can classify a workers' man's job with... When it's in government papers showing that in an all-out war, there was only 10 to 15% of people that didn't get to come back to the United States. And, I mean, that's more of a critical than going out and working on an everyday job.
It's a philosophical question.
Yeah.
I don't see how they can put a percentage later with a job against the war, understand?
Yeah, I understand. I'm Mr. Dillon, the team's all here.
Go ahead.
Mr. Dillon, may I ask a twofold question? One, do other states break out the log truckers from the general logging rate? And if so, what's the correlation there? And secondly,
do you have an opinion if, in fact, the log truckers of Oregon were out of it, what the rate might be?
Some states do break it out, and some of them do not. Generally, they do not. It's thrown in. Log hauling years ago was broken out in Oregon. This was years ago, and the rate was higher than logging. I might point out, however, at that particular time, the logging roads and the dumps and everything were not as good as they are today, nor were the roads as good as they are today. And when they had an accident, it was a very severe one, usually. So if you broke it out today, and that has been suggested in the last number of years, that they make application to consider doing that, and that has to be made by their organization, and they can do it through the National Council. They could break it out, but if they did break it out, they would live with whatever that rate would be. And that still can take place. It takes a couple years to gather the information to establish the rate. If I had to guess, it would probably be lower today if it was separated out.
Now,
it would also mean
what
that
rate, the general logging rate, or the as I interpret Bill's question, if there were a separate classification for independent owner operators and they were covered under the workman's comp law, what would their rate be?
Well, it would be more. It would be all log hauling would be separated out, not only independent owner, but all log hauling would be separated out from the actual logging show operations. And if I had a guess to make, I would suggest that log hauling rate would probably be lower. Also, if that would be the case, probably the logging rate would be higher.
One subsidizing the other.
Right. And if it would be the other way, it would affect them the other way.
Have you seen the Senate Bill 625? It's this newspaper thing.
Yes.
And you've seen the trend that they've put forth in that bill. Do you see a problem with that at all? For those of you who do not have it, what they've done, as I stated earlier, they've got the same area of the law that you're concerned about, and they just have a general section in here that says a newspaper carrier utilized in compliance with the provisions of Section 3 or 4 of this 77 Act are not subject workmen. And then in Section 4, it says an individual qualifies for the exemption saying he's a non-subject workman if he, in essence, provides the following benefit. It's a medical and health benefit for the individual. And what it says, the part that I'm interested in, is that it says that $250,000 unallocated hospital and medical benefits, $10 per week lost time benefits for a period of 52 weeks, and a $5,000 accidental death and dismemberment benefit. And my question to Mr. Gill is, what does he think about that scheme? And what that is, they would say that you're not a subject workman if you have a private policy that would provide those benefits. Go ahead, Chuck.
Well, I have a difficult time putting the newspaper carriers with the log hauler.
So I mean, just the concept.
The concept. Leaving the newspaper people aside, the way I feel, if you want to know how I feel that log haulers are businessmen, independent operators, just like a guy owning a store down here, or just like a guy that is in business any place, and I would hate to prescribe that he has to have any level of insurance. If you do it for the log haulers, then I would suggest that maybe you should consider doing it for every other independent contract. And it's just a feeling that I have.
Chuck, we're going to go into session. Are you in support, would you be in support of a bill that would exempt the independent owner-operator log truck driver from the definition of non-subject workman?
Yes, I would.
That's what Thank you very much.
Is that your personal position, or is that the position of state?
Well, that's my personal position, and I'd like to point out that SAFE has tried to act as a, it's forgotten now, but SAFE has tried to provide the coverage when it was needed years ago. And you read the law, you say, it says SAFE, the shall, and carriers may. For a long time, you know, we did that to provide an opportunity for them to work. It was never, we never did set the rates, nor did we try to force them under, but provide the risk. I've always felt they were businessmen, and but they had to work, and we tried to provide a way for them to do that. The rates have gone up, and it's a difficult situation today.
Thank you, Chuck. Yeah. For those of you who traveled a great distance on Memorial Day, the session starts at 10:30 up on the floor. I'm going to speak for the rest of the committee. We're highly appreciative of you people coming up on the holiday to come up here and to testify on behalf of this bill. You've probably detected a feeling that the committee has, and I think I can say also that at least for a majority of the members, that it appears to me that they are interested in finding a way to exempt the independent owner-operator log truck driver. The present bill is much broader than that, and I think that for a number of reasons, both political and some practical, that the bill and Mr. French and Mr. McKellar have it will supply the committee with an amendment to try and restrict it to you particular people solely and not other independent contractors in the state. Again, I thank you for losing your Memorial Day holiday, and I'm sure that it's just going to have an impact on the committee when they consider this legislation. Thank you very much.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Any of them that haven't had enough are welcome to come up and watch us operate on the floor if they can handle it.
Before I leave, there were three bills up. Mr. Spinner didn't get a chance to testify again. I will set those up for hearing within the next 2 days that were on the agenda today and that we did not get to. Anything else to come before the committee? Hearing none, we're adjourned.